I'd like to call this Council in Budget Committee meeting to order. Madam Clerk, the roll call, please.
All members of Council are present, Your Worship, with the exception of Councilors Zanko and Butler.
Thank you. There are no announcements this evening. There's no addendum. Are there any disclosures of pecuniary interest? There being none, then I'm going to pass the chair to the Chair of Corporate Services, Councilor Nutt.
Test. Okay. Just going to borrow this mic for a moment. So our first presentation tonight will be from Craig Schufelt, from who is the CEO of the Fort Erie Public Library, who has a presentation that he'll be going through.
Larry Greenberg, my board chair.
Thank you very much. So at the podium, we'll have Larry Graber presenting the first half of the presentation.
Dave, do we?
We do.
Yeah.
My name is Larry Graber. I'm the chair of the library board. Along with me, of course, we have Craig Schufelt, our CEO, and we have Ann McLaughlin, who's the president of the Friends of the Fort Erie Public Library, and Maria Brigantino, who's the administrator for the library. Aside from that, I see another familiar face come in. I'll get started with the presentation. Provincial grant operating amount has been unchanged for the past 25 years. There is hope that this might change in the next few years as there is a push to set a per capita funding amount, but it's not likely to change in 2018. The capacity grant funding has been used for the past few years to purchase computers and other technologies, which has allowed us to keep our automated costs flat. The space planning programs and service study included input from library staff, board members, the town, and members of our community. This document will drive many of our goals and objectives, both in terms of operations and capital spending. 2017 was a very slow year in terms of major capital projects, as we spent the majority of the year waiting for the completion of our space planning programs and services study. We now have reading areas at both of our local arenas, and both are extremely well utilized. The move of the Adult Literacy Council out of our Centennial branch will allow us to move our existing boardroom to the space previously occupied by ALC, thus opening up our current boardroom for public use. We're very proud of the number of partnerships that have been developed over the years, and this slide shows many of them that have been with us for many years. Our homework help program has been growing steadily since we started it 3 years ago. We have gone from averaging 3 to 4 students per day initially to double digits last year, and now we are averaging about 20 kids per day. The program has become so popular that the best advertising for it now is through word of mouth. We averaged about 5 children's programs per week in 2017, and we expect similar numbers in terms of offerings for 2018. We find that many of the kids coming to the program don't have any actual homework, or they complete it quickly. To keep kids engaged during these days when they don't have homework, we use the STEAM approach for activities. STEAM, of course, standing for science, technology, engineering, arts, and math for each day of the week. At the library, you can tell when school is out by the sounds of kids running down the hall to the homework help program. It's amazing to see how much the kids look forward to it. We have continued to purchase technologies that can be utilized by staff and patrons, including a green screen that we have used in some programming. One of our goals for 2018 will be to find a space where the community is allowed more access to some of these technologies. The transition to VoIP phones allows us to easily call between branches and will also provide some cost savings with the elimination of landlines. The iPads are being well utilized since their installation, and kids seem to have a clear preference for them over traditional PCs. Pictures of two of the items mentioned. The first is the green screen, where you can see the kids are being placed into a nature scene. The second is one of the new iPads at the Centennial branch. As you'll see in some later slides, our circulation decreased in comparison with the previous year, while library visits remain stable and program attendance increased. We've talked about the library being used differently than in the past, and that's what we saw this past year. Our public PCs continue to be extremely well utilized. Given the cost of internet access for home, we don't see this changing in the near future. Here are some of the library programs. First one being ukulele lessons are one of the programs introduced in 2017, and they fill rather quickly. Two more well-attended and fun programs, a superhero party. I think if you look closer, you'll see Mayor Redekop in that picture. And, of course, making galaxy star jars. We also offer programs for other ages, two of which are included here. On the left is a picture from our third How-To Festival, while on the right is our annual Trivia Time event hosted by Councillor Passero. As mentioned earlier, circulation was down this year by about 8% compared to 2016, despite not seeing a reciprocal reduction in the number of library visitors. As you can see by looking at our circulation by quarters, it was the past several months of the year that really saw the greatest drop. I'm sure the numbers were impacted by the construction on Central Avenue and the fact that we no longer have a high school across the park, but neither explains such a precipitous drop. This is one of our big challenges for 2018 to reverse this trend. The biggest drop, both in raw numbers and in terms of percentage decrease, occurred at the Centennial Branch. The bright spot in terms of circulation is that we continue to see growth in e-material borrowing. We currently offer downloadable books, audiobooks, comics, music, films, and magazines. And it's the one area that continues to trend upwards with an 11.3% increase in 2017. This is a slide that we include every year to show some of the overarching values that we feel we are providing to our community and to which we continually try to adhere. I know you guys are interested in the numbers, so I'll ask our CEO, Craig Shufeldt, to come forward. Craig?
Thank you. Larry? Thank you, Mayor Redekop and Council, for having us tonight. And I also thank you again to Maria and Ann for showing up tonight. Larry mentioned that Ann is president of our Friends group. I should also say she's also the one who's pretty much solely responsible for starting this latest incarnation of the Friends group. I know it's come and gone over the years, going back many years, but I would give Ann the credit for pretty much everything that's gone on with the Friends group over the past few years, and a past board member and board chair as well. So as Larry mentioned, I'll be talking about the budget and some of our goals and objectives moving forward, the budget for 2018-2020 and objectives for this year. The first slide is one that we start with each year, showing what we consider to be, I wouldn't call them fixed costs, but almost, and they are our contractual obligations. The largest of these by far being staff wages and benefits. You've obviously looked at the library budget each year. You see that more than two-thirds, about 70%, which is pretty standard in libraries, is allotted for staff wages and benefits. We don't see that changing up or down at any point in the near future. Got a couple of slides to talk about some of our larger goals and objectives for 2018. As Larry had mentioned earlier, this was a slow year for us in terms of completing capital projects. So we do have some major ones for 2018-2019, and I'll talk about those just before the end of my presentation. The changes suggested from our recently completed space planning programs and services plan will affect not only capital items in the layout of the library, but also some of our operational ideas over the next few years, including programs. We've assembled a large number of items for maker purposes, and as Larry mentioned, the goal this year will be to provide a space where patrons are able to access them outside of our programs. We use them for these programs. We use them in the after-school homework help program, but we'd like to make them more readily available. We've got robots, which we've shown up here before. We've got very high-end Lego and Lego-style kits for building, electronic kits, a vinyl cutter, the green screen that you saw. We've got enough that we could take a small room and make a very nice area out of it. So again, we just want people to be able to access that outside of set hours all the time. The Fort Erie Native Friendship Center has agreed to provide us with their assistance towards creating a First Nations collection that will be housed at the Centennial Branch. And that's one of the items we're excited about getting completed this year. So getting into the numbers, our municipal grant request, you're aware, is for the amount of $1,500,529, which represents a 2% increase or $29,417 increase over 2017. At this point, we are not asking for any development charges. We don't believe the time is appropriate for that. Mm-hmm. Taking a closer look at some of our supplementary revenue, we talk about this all the time, and again, Larry's mentioned it, the $60,682. This is my seventh presentation, I believe, before this council, and it's been the same, and it was probably the same in 15 to 20 years ago. It's been quite a long time. The Federation of Ontario Public Libraries and the Ontario Library Association are both advocating as strongly as they can for a per capita funding, to work on a per capita funding basis. But again, as Larry mentioned, we don't see any progress on that, I would doubt, over the next couple of years. Fines and fees have actually remained quite consistent despite the decrease in our circulation numbers. We began this year using a collection agency that works specifically with libraries, and we found that they've been very effective in collecting not only some of the monies owed to us, but also in recovering a lot of our materials that we had written off as lost. The contribution from the capital reserve account, you can see we've taken $12,770 from our capital reserve that we will shift over to our operations account to balance for this year. That's down from a transfer we made last year for $15,376. Again, we don't think it's ideal to contribute from a capital reserve every year to balance a budget, but in our case, I think this makes a lot of sense right now. As you're aware, we ran a surplus in 2015 and a very significant surplus in 2016, so I don't think it's asking a lot on our end to take some of those surplus funds and move them over for this reason. And I'd also note that, and you likely saw it on the estimated year ends I sent to you, we did have a contribution from capital reserve last year of $15,376. We didn't actually have to utilize that money. So the $15,376 really ended up only being what I would consider a paper transfer, essentially. This is a three-year snapshot of our budget summary, 2.0, 2.7, and again, 2.0 for 2020. The only thing I would say is I would caution that these numbers do tend to change. The 2.7, I could change. It could come down. I would hope it would come down more than going up for next year. Last year, when I presented for the 2017 budget, the 2018 estimate at the time was 3.4%. Obviously, we're coming in at 2.0 tonight, so that can change. And I also note, excuse me, that those 2.7 and 2.0 are estimated using no transfers from our reserves. So if transfers are used, those numbers would obviously change as well, shift downwards. So again, it's just a grain of salt approach on the 2019-2020. One area where we've been quite successful in spending is increasing our materials expenditures spending as a percentage of our overall expenditures. And we'll see that again this year, going from 11.4% in 2017 to 11.8% in 2018. We'd like to get that up to the 13 to 14% range, which is often easier said than done, obviously, with your other expenditures, especially the salaries and benefits. It's nice to have the increase, and we'd like to think it means that we can purchase many more materials, but unfortunately, we're seeing a lot of that purchasing power slightly disappear because electronic materials are still so almost prohibitively expensive in some cases. I like to include this slide every year to show how we're funded by our municipality in comparison to other libraries within our region of similar size. We feel that the town has been extremely generous in their funding of the library, and I think you can see that quite clearly when you compare us to other libraries within our region finishing second on this list. It's quite impressive. The next slide shows that what we believe we're making good use of those funds that we receive from the town by providing almost 20 more hours of service per week than the next closest library in Lincoln, and in some cases more than two times as many hours as some of the other libraries. Staffing three branches, both in terms of dollars and in terms of bodies, is a difficult challenge, but one that we know benefits our community. And this slide essentially ties together the previous two to show the funding per operating hour. You can see that we're second next to Lincoln here. I would note that in defense of some of the other libraries whose costs look much higher than ours, there could be other factors that go into that. Staffing, programming, whatever other expenses they might have, we're not always aware of. Just as I believe part of the reason why ours would be higher than Lincoln is that they only have to worry about two branches where we have to worry about three. I don't think this is a perfect measure of efficiency, but I do think it is a measure of efficiency, and we would always like to be nice and close to the front on this graph every year. I've included our account balances for our operating reserve and capital reserve accounts. You can see during last year's presentation, if you remember, I discussed our intention to create an operating reserve account and to transfer $75,000 from our existing surplus to the newly created operating reserve and to transfer the remainder to a capital reserve to replenish that account. We've been able to do that. The capital reserve, as you can see, has a healthy balance, $268,000. I had sent to all members of council last week our capital plan for 2018-19, where planned spending would utilize about $230,000 of that amount. And given cost overruns that everybody is aware of with capital projects, probably slightly more than $230,000. Never quite works out that neatly. So before I wrap up, I just wanted to talk about a couple of those big capital projects. Since we do have what I would consider a very healthy reserve, we do want to make use of that. One of the big projects for this year will be the replacement of the service desk at the Centennial Branch. If you've been in there, if you know the branch, it's a very large desk. It's probably taking up 700 square feet of space. So we're looking at something more functional for staff, as well as something that would be leave a smaller footprint, which would allow more space for the public. As Larry mentioned earlier, we're going to be utilizing the existing boardroom for public space. We're really trying to take away the space that we're using that could be utilized by the public for more seating, more computer areas, whatever it might be. And I have had some questions about the AV system at Crystal Ridge recently. That project is underway and will be completed by February. We did a similar project last year at the Centennial Branch. It was very successful. We do plan to replace most of the public seating at all library branches. We've got some rather dated, either by the fluorescent green colors or the well-worn colors that you'll see at some of the branches. The furniture is literally decades old. It's very much showing its wear. We've already added some new seating in the teen area at the Crystal Ridge branch, and you'll see these new additions pop up at all three branches throughout the year. And finally, the big one, the children's area redesign at Centennial, another very major undertaking, one that we have completed the design process on, but it's still going to take several months. We're currently in the process of having construction drawings completed for that one, after which any plans will go out to tender. So as far as capital projects, this is going to be a big year for capital projects. We're hoping that making the libraries a more attractive place will hopefully help to reverse some of that downward trend we've seen in use as far as circulation, which isn't a perfect measure, but it is, again, a measure. We're still seeing people come in, but we'd like to get those circ numbers back up. And we believe that this will be at least partial answer for it. That wraps up my portion. Larry is going to come up. I believe he wanted to show a short video and then say a few words. You want me to start the video? Sure. It's just a video that we put together. I say we, but I actually played no part in it, so I can't take any credit for it. But just showing some of our programs over the last year. And I believe the volume should be okay. We're at the beginning here. That was put together by Carissa Fast, who is our children and teen librarian, popped up a couple of times in there. So she did a great job on it. Thanks.
Oh, if only we could go back several decades for me. I don't know about the rest of you, but I sure don't remember libraries being like that when I was young. I'm coming to the end of 5 years as chair of the Fort Erie Public Library Board. But when I look back over the 5 years, I guess we hired Craig just over 5 years ago, but with Craig and Maria, with the other staff changes, we have just been so overwhelmed with the quality of staff that we've associate with our library. And certainly some of the new staff hires met and are exceeding our expectations. So certainly feel that's a great accomplishment for Craig and Maria. They do the interviewing and the selection. But certainly from the board, we've did an initial strat plan in the last 5 years, and then we updated it to look at the next couple of years. We've utilized resources to meet our strat plan. Our staff, I guess I'm looking at the staff and looking at an environment that's unionized, but I find that the staff doesn't matter what's going on in the library. They're really willing and able to pitch in and help. Doesn't matter if it's their job or within their job description or even in their area of expertise. They're certainly willing to go and help and pitch in wherever it's necessary. So, I feel really proud of the team and what they've done. And certainly what we're seeing now are changes that we've talked about for the last few years as far as building up our nest egg to do and holding off on making furniture purchases and shelving and all the other things that belong in the library until we had a clear picture of where we're at and where we wanted to go. So these studies have certainly helped us do all that. The things that we've seen, online services have been enhanced, collections have grown. We've updated the audiovisual equipment, or will have very shortly, in both of the meeting rooms. We're now moving the boardroom away from the public area and hopefully have that area utilized better, as Craig mentioned earlier. There's staff education opportunities are being developed and being worked with. When I look at, again, all I can say is thank you for the support of town council, for the help of town staff whenever asked, especially Tom Cookett, our CAO, Tom Mathers, Sean Hutton, Jonathan Jansen, to name but a few. I look at Diana Kelly and Bev Bragnum, Signe Hansen, Rick Brady. You've all been such a big help with us over the years, and all I can say is thank you. That's my speech.
Thank you very much, Mr. Graber. If you and Mr. Shufelt wouldn't mind remaining at the podium in case any of the council have questions or comments for you, we'll go ahead and... Are there any comments or questions in regards to the presentation, Councilor Lubbers?
Yes, thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Mr. Shufelt, just one, the capital funding from the province, you said that they might change that to per capita. Will that be a positive for us or a negative?
It's been held stable pretty much for 25 years. Yeah, it's actually the provincial operating funding, the portion of our operations that comes from the provincial funding. Yeah, it's been flat at that exact number, 60,682, for literally 25 years.
Did the province give you any indication at all?
No, there have been meetings between the advocates, the groups that advocate for the libraries, and various ministers, our minister, ministerial reps, but typically you're not going to get a commitment until that paper is signed.
Okay, all right, thanks.
Thank you, Councillor Lubberts. Does anyone else, Councillor Passero?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, everyone, for being here. I know every year when we hear the library budget presentation and you highlight the percentage that's spent on staff wages, you always do it very sheepishly, as if it's something to be ashamed of. But when you watch videos like that, I mean, the wages and the staff, that is the programming at the library. And I don't draw any delineation between that or your program budget, your circulation budget, any of those other items. It's the people that make the programs that make the library. So I have no issue with that line item. There should no shame in that, because it is the people, the smiling faces, and the job that they do that make it such a welcoming environment. We're proud to support it.
Thank you, Councillor Passero. Your Worship.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you very much for the presentation. And I just want to echo Councillor Passero's comments. You know, if you've got 9,000 active members, that's, as I've said in the past, undoubtedly the most utilized facility that we offer to our residents. And I'm sure that many of the individuals who we saw, many of the children that we saw in these in this video, aren't necessarily taking out a book or a video when they come in on that particular occasion. So you mentioned that the numbers were up in terms of attendance, material usage down, and I do think you hit on some very likely explanations, the high school and the work on Central Avenue. But I noticed that your salary costs actually are increasing less than your overall budget, less than 1%. And I know you do a remarkable job there. Two questions. Where will the board meetings be held in the future then, if you're going to be turning that space into more public space?
The existing, the space previously held by the Adult Literacy Council, the boardroom will just move into that space. It's okay. Actually, it's been painted. They're changing the carpeting in there now and doing some tile work, so likely within the next couple of months.
Okay. And you're right, the $60,000 from the province, that was in existence, I think, when I was on the library board, and that's almost 30 years ago. One other question, Councillor Zanko asked me to raise with you, and I know we touched on it when we had met with you last month to go over the budget, and that has to do with security. You had some security issues at Centennial Branch the past year, and have there been some additional resources or some additional attention paid to those issues?
we haven't budgeted any funds towards actual security. We haven't included that in the salaries and benefits. What we've tried to do is to weed out some of the people that were causing the problems. As with any place, public place, a library, an arena, whatever it might be, you've got hundreds of people through there every week, and there's just a few who are causing the majority of the problems. So unfortunately, we don't like to do it, but we have had over the last few months to ban, not necessarily forever, but some suspensions and some banishments from the library. And I would say even from those, we've seen quite a difference. It just comes down now to consistent enforcement of our code of conduct.
I know you take that issue very seriously. I want to congratulate you and the board and your staff for providing excellent service to the community.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Worship. Councillor McDermott.
Well, thank you very much for the presentation tonight. As a board member of the library board, I can state unequivocally how proud I am to sit on it. And I think the main reason I'm excited about the library board is because it brings about a lot of people with different viewpoints. And this board is exceptional this time around. I've noticed it. Intelligent, proactive, and wanting to do things now. And the children's programs, the reader series, just everything has just been so excellent this year. And I think a big part of the library is the friends aspect of it. I think you're absolutely correct. And service to the board and to the library is just so far above. There's no words to really thank her for the work they do. So we're very grateful as a community to have just community members like yourself that care about literacy, care about children's programs, care about educating us. And it's a delightful place, and it's going to get much better because of all the due diligence that you've done. And I certainly appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor McDermott. Just a few comments on your presentation from myself, and very well done, very well put together with the video. Just from the residents in Stevensville and Black Creek area, what I've heard is the first question that I always get asked at budget time is,
the branch closing. And I just have to say that when I tell people, no, it's not closing, you know, there's actual plans to, you know, modify the shelving and make it more user-friendly, a lot of the community responds very well to that. And I think it's also going to help getting people there now that there's a bus stop right out in front. And I don't know if you've seen an increase in usership with people maybe coming from the Black Creek Seniors community or other areas where you're just seeing a little bit more traffic into the branch library. I don't know if that's been visible or not.
I don't think we've seen a significant increase out there, but I do believe that in December, Stevensville, as we'd shown on the charts there, the circulation it decreased quite a bit. Stevensville actually held stable and may have had a slight gain. So they did better by comparison to last year than the other two branches did over the last couple of months, for sure.
And the last request from the residents, my constituents in my ward, is that is it possible that we could look at putting at some point in the capital budget a roadside pylon sign that's a little closer to the road to indicate that the library is in with the Memorial Hall right now, unless you're driving past there, just something for feedback for future consideration.
Yeah, are you talking about just something to let people know the library is there? Yeah, that's been a very active discussion at the board level. Councillor McDermott is aware, and we are trying to make that more notice, something more noticeable than your very small blue sign with the traditional library sign.
Perfect. Thank you very much, gentlemen. Seeing no other comments or questions, thank you very much. We'll be going through the budget line items later.
Your Worship, I'm going to pass the chair back to you so that we can move forward, or do you want me to just call a break to allow the EDC time to get set up?
Okay. We're just going to have a short 5-minute recess to allow the next presenter to get set up.
Test, test, test. Test, test. Test, 1, 2. Test, test. Test, 1, 2. Test, 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 1, 2.
Yep.
Test, test. Test, test. Test, test, test. Test, test. Test, test.
And challenge.
Test, test.
We have two mics that just won't work.
Bizarre.
Test, test.
Outside of Gorn, Christina Court. Part of it was loud, the other part was loud. No. You stop at the fence where Beaver Creek starts. No, there's a fence on either side of that. So the southerly fence, they run the plow from Hazel, past Turtle Daycare, past, I think, 3 houses, and they stop at the fence. And that's it. I ran out of gas.
Yes.
Oh, what?
No, ran out of cop.
Yeah. Oh, there you go. Oh. Houses in there. So, a woman that walks down to tell you, why are we putting that? You're walking on the road in the winter. Look, you choose. We choose. Oh, okay. I know, but yeah. In the city, that's true. But in the city, I don't know how well those are enforced.
Okay, we'll readjourn. And presenting next is the ETC with their 2017 annual report and their 2018 budget request. Thank you very much, Mr. Pilato. And begin with your presentation when you're ready.
Hey, Chairman Nutt, Mayor Redekop, and members of the council. Fortive Economic Development and Tourism Corporation are pleased to be here tonight to present our 2017 annual budget and 2018 budget plan. I should note that the EDTC chair, Rick Gorm, would normally be making this presentation. However, he is out of the country and is unable to attend. As vice chair, this opportunity falls on me. He's probably basking in the sun right now. The 2017 year has once again been an extremely busy and productive year for the EDTC. It is especially notable that 2017 was the 25th year in partnership with the Council of Fort Erie. For this quarter century, the EDTC has striven to help create an environment in Fort Erie conducive to business being able to create jobs, growth, and prosperity. Our general manager, Jim Tebear, will take council through the highlights of 2017 and, of course, raise the annual report. We have all the details laid out in the 2017 annual report and 2018 budget plan. On behalf of the board of directors, I cannot express how strongly enough that through our well-qualified and experienced staff, they have created networks in federal and provincial agencies and established a solid working relationship with the region of Niagara and with senior staff of the town of Fort Erie. It is through these networks that the EDTC supports our client base of businesses and manufacturers, both existing and in attracting new and expansion efforts, resolution of problems, constraining their potential, and in helping of quickly and efficiently addressing retention issues as they may arise. Our staff generate a wealth of data that assists businesses, including the corporation of the town of Fort Erie, as issues arise. Their expertise, experience, and relationships means that the EDTC is a peer in economic development throughout the region and beyond. From time to time, as the situation may call for it, the EDTC goes beyond facilitation and takes the lead in helping to retain and rebuild a critical business. As in the case of the Fort Erie racetrack, the EDTC took the lead physical management necessary to maintain our oldest and one of our largest tourism attractions. The reputation of the Fort Erie Economic Development and Tourism Corporation is that it is absolutely relentless in the pursuit of new opportunities for development and in assisting local businesses overcome hurdles of development. Mr. Mayor, members of Council, we should all be pleased and proud of our Fort Erie Economic Development and Tourism Corporation. It is a unique organization created by this council 25 years ago, and it has grown to be a highly effective and respected tool in the town of Fort Erie, the efforts to grow and prosper. I will now pass the podium over to Mr. Tebear to provide the presentation and budget. Thank you for your continuing support and contribution.
Thank you, Mr. Pilato. Mr. Tebear.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of council, Mr. Mayor. The fact that the report is 187 pages long, would you like to pass that resolution for us to go past 15 minutes?
I think we're okay if you...
He indicated that he was going to be briefer this year than last year.
That's why I
if he already took up 10 minutes, there's no point in stopping me in the middle.
Waste it on your own petard.
All right, just trying to be efficient here. So everybody's gotten a copy of the 2017 annual report and the 2018 budget request. I can take you through that, but more importantly, some highlights. This year, the podiums have been moved. I'm about 17 feet away from where I was 17 years ago, and now I have to operate the equipment as well. So just briefly for those in attendance coming, this is a little report that's in the front all the time about what the Economic Development Corporation is, who we are, who the board members are, who staff are. So for those at home that are listening, that's on the first slide, and I can cut through that pretty quick. Everybody here knows that. Second slide is an excerpt from the report that shows a graphic of balloons that talks about what our spectrum of development responsibilities are for the town of Fort Erie. And it's a rather unique and shapely little unit out of the entire compendium of what services the town has to provide. And there's an area in between where we collaborate with the town on a number of factors and reports and the system. So that's our spectrum of the continuum of economic development. So the 2017 highlights. So first of all, one of the biggest things we've ever done is the economic preparedness strategy. Deloitte was retained by the Economic Development Corporation to prepare an economic preparedness strategy. That is that we have a number of projects that we've been working with and holding on and continue to have investors out there trying to put together some very large projects that are in themselves in the $150, $200, $300 million range. And what would the impact be on Fort Erie, if any one or all of them or any combination went forward? And of course, how can we get our businesses and our people here jobs and opportunities for expansion? How can we, knowing these are coming, take advantage and strategize for them and give them an opportunity to make sure they share in that wealth of opportunity that comes directly or indirectly from these attractions that are coming? And the summary of the projected impacts, of course, at peak capacity, just looking at the marina project and the speedway, should that go ahead or when it goes ahead, would bring in the equivalent to double the current population of Fort Erie. We have, together with the CMS and the Miller Creek Marina, would have an annual GDP, that's gross domestic product, impact of $67.5 million annually and 230. Depends on how big and how well they go, but it's somewhere between 67 and 230. The greatest opportunities for local businesses in Fort Erie would come from additional tourism spending when it comes to those projects because they're tourism-based. Our estimates suggest the total annual spending in that range in Fort Erie would be between $126 and $441 million, both direct and indirect and induced. So a lot of money that could come into the town of Fort Erie, and it does us no good if somebody else either creates the businesses or has the jobs or takes advantage of that money. We want our ratepayers who are businesses, our ratepayers who are employees and their families to be able to take maximum advantage of that. So what does Fort Erie need to do to get these off? There's a series of recommendations. First, Fort Erie needs to develop proactive strategies to prioritize these major projects and develop a clear path of moving them forward. Secondly, working with the proponents, full-time effort in project management is required and of the town in the business plans, capital plans, lobbying, and expediting required approvals, because there will be a ton of development approvals, a ton of planning. Planning investments in support facilities, policies, and staffing is number three. Number four, communicate opportunities to local businesses so they can prepare and respond. Number five, facilitation of local companies responding to tenders. That's where we come in and help develop the business plans or models. Six, identify skills gaps and develop learning and training initiatives. Seven, enhance engagement with youth workers. This is going to be a long-term initiative, so we have to give people ideas of careers. Eight, enhancing transit connectivity. We got to get people back and forth within Fort Erie, let alone in and out of Fort Erie. Number nine, working with tourism leaders on new offerings. So new product developments, how to expand theirs, how to create new ones. Number 10, enhancing food services and capabilities. This is a note from managing the Fort Erie racetrack. Food services and capabilities around accommodation are going to be incredibly important. If they can't have these facilities in place when these projects move forward, those people will establish a place to go, whether it be Niagara Falls or Welland or someplace else or Buffalo, and they'll continue to do that after because they're creatures of habit. If they had a good experience someplace else, come and watch the Canadian Motor Speedway race, they'll continue to do that in the future. We've got to get them into services in Fort Erie if we're going to maximize the growth. Otherwise, we end up with noise and dust traffic, right? Second big thing that we did was the industrial land development strategy. We coordinated to be able to read and do this stuff. The availability of shovel-ready land, especially industrial land, is imperative to the future growth of the town of Fort Erie. The Fort Erie Economic Development and Tourism Corporation and the town of Fort Erie have embarked on an ambitious industrial land development strategy. It's probably the biggest thing we've done in terms of land management in 25, 30 years. To identify current land inventory and to map and analyze lands outside the urban service boundary, which can potentially be converted to competitively priced service shovel-ready industrial land for interested investors. A full copy of the report can be seen at the www.forteriecanada.com website for those that are listening, and you'll find it on the website and you can follow through with the entire report. The Fort Erie Economic Development Corporation will continue to play a lead role in the development, acquisition, and management of new severed industrial land as the town may require. But at this stage of the game, it really is up to our municipal partners who have helped through this, the CAO's office, our entire planning department, our public works department. They've got to be able to move forward with all of the regulations, official plan amendments, comprehensive municipal surveys. We need to exert an aggressive approach to this as opposed to waiting for somebody else to come around and we fall into their platform. Otherwise, we will not have enough land. We are already turning away opportunities in Fort Erie for some significant size developments because we just don't have the land or the service land. So that's the last thing we want to do, is turn business away. So the next steps, the town in consultation with the Economic Development Corporation and the region of Niagara, during and after the regional municipal comprehensive review, should take immediate steps to, one, designate at least 184 gross hectares of additional vacant industrial land in Fort Erie by 2036, and at least 273 gross hectares by 2041 by way of urban boundary expansion. Number two, ensure all additional vacant land added to the urban boundary is included in the Gateway CIP, Community Improvement Program, and eligible for all Gateway Community Improvement CIP incentives. Number three, review master servicing plans to determine if timing of provision of full sanitary and water sewers, water services can be significantly advanced to the 40 hectares of developable industrial land not currently fully serviced within the urban service boundary. Four, provide funding for an area-wide environmental impact study for 84 hectares of vacant industrial lands that are currently available but have EC overlays, and to see if these constraints can be removed or modified in our favor of development. Five, formally advise industrial property owners to maintain their properties, including not allowing vegetation on parts of their property not designated EC to grow. And when I talk about moving the ECs, it's because they're all classified by species, they're all classified by value, they're all classified by wetland. But in the meantime, we have had serious problems, and you're spending, I think, $800,000 a year to clear out ash trees, but ash trees are a huge indicator. And so if we have areas with EC overlays that were put over the top of the scale because of all the ash trees, well, they're gone. We should reevaluate those scoring because that industrial land is useful. It's more immediate than trying to get something in the urban service boundary, and it may be marketable. We also have some more direct and specific recommendations for outside the urban service boundary. And you can see on the map, it's like add sites 5, 2, 1, and 3. And if the CMS lands are serviced, sites 6 and 8 would go beside them. And they should be reevaluated and considered in addition to the urban boundary. All industrial land added to the urban boundary as per the recommendations should also be designated as prime employment areas under the official plan. And number four, region and town to ensure when measuring minimum density targets for designated greenfield areas, the prime employment areas are excluded from this measurement as per the proposed growth plan. And number five, ensure all vacant industrial land added to the urban boundary is included in the Gateway CIP and eligible for CIP incentives. Also, the town needs to take the lead because it is a regulatory response at this point in time. And we need to ensure that the town has the information, that it's current and it's relevant to what is vacant, what can be removed from ECs, the assessments to get those ECs, and to maintain the inventory of lands up to date. And two, to monitor an annual report to council on the supply and absorption of industrial land in Fort Erie and employment densities being achieved on both existing and new industrial sites. That's the industrial land strategy. Another highlight that's interesting is County Fair Mall. We've worked with the Town of Fort Erie staff and the region, and we've been successful in having that property purchased from the owners, taking it out of commercial application. It's going to be demolished. Our latest estimates are it should be demolished or begin to be demolished sometime in February. And this is going to be quite the renaissance project for the area of South Garrison and the neighborhoods towards the water. So it's going to be the region of Niagara retirement homes, replace Gilmore Lodge and be larger, but it's also going to be of mixed use and some commercial use at front that's related to that site. So it really is a major site. It's going to be completely redeveloped. It's going to be public dollars, so it's going to be a AAA project. There's no doubt about it. And it'll be a flagship project for Fort Erie, and it's a real coup in Fort Erie's hat to have that. So it will help all the businesses along east side of east end of, let's say, Garrison Road, pretty much Thompson Road down, but certainly Concession Road down. So that's a huge project on its own, and it's going to be cleaning up a pretty desolate area. We would consider that kind of a blue field, and you know, it'll be a great project that we'll be talking about for the next 4 years. Get a lot of press out of that. And so we want to thank our partners at the region for doing that. Next project that's a highlight is the Foreign Trade Zone, Niagara Foreign Trade Zone. So the Niagara Development Corridor Partnership and the Niagara Region Economic Development Corporation, actually departments, worked together to prepare a presentation to the federal government, and we became the fifth foreign trade zone in Canada designated. So the Foreign Trade Zone handles a number of federal projects and programs. I'll get to them in a minute. But ultimately, the Foreign Trade Zone is a tool in our attractions program. It's a tool in our retention program. And so we have a full-time body that's coming on board. We have one now on contract, but in April we'll have a full-time body. The storefront operation will be in Fort Erie. It will be in the Economic Development Corporation offices, where once the Chamber of Commerce was. It'll have some support staff, and they'll be dealing from there for all of the region of Niagara. So it's fundamentally like a regional office in Fort Erie. We're in the process right now of striking an operational management contract with the region, and we'll provide at the EDC the daily oversight and management structure and report back to the region on that. You can see from the graphic up above, this is just one of three graphics that we're preparing for a meeting that we have with the government in next week. And you can see that it will go out to the public in the interested party. So whether it be manufacturers, whether it be import replacement, export potential, this is all local to Niagara. Feeds back down to us and builds a database, and from there we know which companies we can provide the details to for the six programs to be able to see if they can, in fact, begin to export, or if they are exporting, how we can make it easier for them and save them some money in the meantime. This is all a goal for us to eventually try to get a free trade zone, which in Canada there are none. There are a lot of free trade zones around the world. Canada doesn't have any, and we'd like to be the first. And so we need some place near the border, has to be a straight run, has to be able to be constrained, secured, and everything else. And with the computers today and the monitoring equipment that is out there, we think that part of the new industrial land that we are looking at could in fact be the region of Niagara's free trade zone. So the manufacturing would go on there without any taxation as things move back and forth across the border until they finally get to the consumer. So there are the programs that the Foreign Trade Zone deals with. Duties Relief Program, the Drawback Program, Custom Bonded Warehouses. We don't have one in this side of Niagara. That's something we're looking at and trying to get people interested in. But they'll need a client base, and so that's why we're developing that employer manufacturing database. The Export Distribution Center Program and Exporters of Processing Services Program. So it's been a busy year in Fort Erie when it comes to manufacturing. We have Greenstone Structural Solutions that we helped establish in Fort Erie. We've actually sold them a piece of property in Commerce Park. But in order to get moving faster to capture the market they've got, it was better for them to rent a space for now in the interim to get their equipment in place and get up to production, and then relocate to a new facility in Commerce Parkway. And so we brokered the sale of the DMI building to CMI, which is Clark Machine out of St. Catharines, and it's Clark CMI Heavy Industries. And they have some space that was perfect for Greenstone. So Greenstone is at CMI on Eagle and Winger Street, and of course CMI has completely relocated as of December the 5th into Fort Erie, I have 65 staff there that are all machinists, welders, millwrights, and they're a major machine company. They deal in huge scale projects, and they're in that 118,000 square foot DMI building that used to be, for some people that might be listening, Rennell. Expansion at Peninsula Alloy, that's growing. They're looking at a 20,000 square foot facility. They'll start that in the spring. And we're working with them and the town of Fort Erie to make sure the site plan, building permits, building department's happy with what's going on there so they can get this thing done in the spring. Canicure is a company that's formed in Fort Erie for the processing of marijuana. They have acquired the, I don't know, was it Barbasol originally? Then it went to Custom Pharmaceutical. Then it became Patheon, and then it became Pharmedics when we helped sell it to a Quebec company, and then that went bankrupt, and the company that's bought it now is Canicure. So that's about 120,000 square foot facility that's perfect for what they want to do, because it's a negative pressure building, which means as soon as you open the door, the air rushes in, not rushing out, is what you'd like to have. It's got licensed labs. It's designed for making pills and for making powders and tablets. And right now they're in the process of putting between $2 and $3 million worth of upgrades to that facility. You should know that the government of Canada has granted them a grow license, so they're going to grow their first crops very shortly. They have to grow two crops that meet specifications, and then after that they're on their own to grow and to sell. There's about 125 jobs that will be entailed in that facility, because there'll be a call center, management, security, processing. They're in the business of creating products like pills and dissolvable powders with the benefits of the marijuana plant without the THC and the high. They're not interested in selling weed to anybody. It's going to be processed, because there's way more money in processing it and synthesizing it than there is in selling it on the street. In the meantime, everything goes according to plan, this will be the biggest marijuana grow operation and processing plant in North America. They have also acquired the rights to 3.4 million square feet of greenhouse in Leamington, and that's where they'll do their growing. And they have a fleet of, I think, 10 freezer units there, and they'll ship the product to Fort Erie for processing. Part of that $3 million upgrade right now is a 12,000 square foot vault. That vault will end up, it's big enough to hold $151 million worth of marijuana at current prices. They'll process that in pills. But they will ship it out around the world. So this is a very exciting project. It's taken about 4 years to get there. And, you know, the people who own the facility, the people who are developing the project, are very patient, but they are moving at lightning speed right now. That company may well go public before this 2018 is out. Niagara Energy Products, you'd know that as Horton. Back off for a second. I'm so used to calling Niagara Energy. Horton CBI is a 185,000 square foot facility. Most people think it's empty. It's not. Pretty much full. It's owned by Niagara Energy Products, and most of the clients in there have some relationship with Niagara Energy Products. They are going through a $17 million expansion between their facility in Niagara Falls and here in Fort Erie. You should notice that they have completely environmentally contained that building. They've insulated it. They put all new siding on it from the outside. They fixed the roof. The interior has been upgraded for its electrical services and everything else. So they are now going to move their own Niagara Energy Corporation in there, and they're going to be doing some serious machining in the balance of the plant for the six units that are there. Are leased out to other companies. The Niagara Region Premier Sites, we have one property in Fort Erie that is eligible for that because it's big enough, and it's our last significant property. It's 33 acres near Airbus, and we're working to have the Niagara Region put that in their first ever premier site selection, and they'll help us market that. We have expansion at Metcor. That facility's been empty since Metcor left it in 2007. We've been working on selling that several times now, but we have sold it helped sell it to a company in Fort Erie that's looking to expand, and they've put over $2 million into that facility this year. And you may see additional buildings going up over the next 2 years. And in terms of moving select industrial and commercial properties that we think are important, we've moved 33 acres at Airbus, 14 acres at the end of Industrial Drive, 12 acres at Bowen and Road in QEW that we're working on right now. It's been purchased, but we're looking at putting a new company in there. 644 Garrison, zero concession, which kills everybody because all the planning maps say zero anything until you actually put a building on it and then it gets its address. But zero concession, which is the land that's immediately contiguous to McDonald's, that's going to be the new Picard Peanuts. And 575 Garrison Road, and that's pending right now. We're working with the company on developing a model and a plan for the area, and they're under their due diligence in purchase. So there is an active offer to purchase on that property. Of course, the Miller Creek Marina Project, many people should know by now that we collectively, the EDC and the town, have been working with Niagara Parks on this. They've gone through two requests for proposals without much success. Their rationale for why there's not a lot of success is diametrically opposed to our rationale. We think that it's incongruous when we have a client that's been with us for 10 years that has committed each and every year to putting $200 to $250 million on that site. And in order to go through a tendering process, we can't seem to get them to develop the request for proposal in such a way that business is able to respond to it. It's not that there isn't interest. It's that they're not interested in the nature of the request for proposal that they put out. So what we need to do is sit down and negotiate with a company and get this development and all be on the same wavelength. And what we need from the town, from the mayor, from the council, is to ensure that you stay on top of this at the political level. But that's the only place that it can move now. And, of course, you have passed a resolution recently, which is fabulous, but I think we need to talk it up and we need to continue to bring up the fact that we have probably 1,600 job opportunities in this project, 1,600. So when you take a look at the size and scope of the tourism industry and the hotels and the marina, I mean, we brought the money, we've got the project. We've been working towards it, and it's red tape at the provincial end, if not just the Crown Corporation end that's holding it up. Of course, the Fort Erie Racetrack, it's been setting record performance in each of the years since the EDC helped take it over. And last year, of course, we ran into a little bit of a problem with Woodbine and the restructuring of racing in Ontario, now called Ontario Racing, and fundamentally, it's controlled by Woodbine, and interesting enough, they've also, at the Ontario Racing Inc., decided that Woodbine would be paid to administer it. I mean, we cannot see any way that there isn't anything but conflicts of interest here. Absolute conflicts of interest, up and down, sideways, back and forth, in and out. And so they presumed to be able to tell horsemen that they couldn't come to Fort Erie or they would lose their stalling capabilities at Woodbine. And, of course, this is 60, 70-year tradition. Neither one of us can charge for the backstretches. We just have to maintain those. Fort Erie pays in excess of $2 million to maintain its backstretch, and Woodbine's whining about $4 million and trying to steal our horses. So we are working with our MPP, Wayne Gates, Councillor McDermott, and the mayor. And, in fact, I think we have a meeting next Tuesday dealing with this. But all in all, all we can do is, from the Fort Erie Racetrack side, continue to do our best for the horsemen, continue to run an efficient operation, continue to maintain it long enough, hopefully, that as either the project that develops on the site or one of the major projects, such as the Canadian Motor Speedway or the marina, go forward, bring more people to the area. That's our goal. We think it's a successful track. We think it can be self-sustaining once we put more development on site or in Fort Erie. We also have had a couple of very interesting worldwide projects, one of which is referred to as Smart Labs Virtual Reality Impact Lab. And the town, the mayor, and the EDC have been presented with an opportunity to enter into a partnership with the University College of Dublin. And in fact, it would be a campus here, but it's a campus for PhD candidates. And it's something that we would never, I don't think anybody's ever thought of this before. We can't seem to convince Niagara College to put a campus here, even though we have great difficulties with transportation for our folks. We can't get Brock University to put a campus here, but Ireland says we can do PhDs here. And so we're looking at that right now. We have put money into Deloitte Consulting of Canada to take a look at it and put it together so that we understand what this is and what the relationships are. And somewhere this year, we'll be bringing it forward to council to consider, you know, do you want to capitalize on this project? Is it something that you can do? Is it something you can afford? Is the value there? And the other one is Amazon HQ2, we call it, which is the international headquarters for Amazon. We've gone around North America looking for a site location. A lot of people think they're just getting municipalities to compete against each other for tax incentives and all sorts of things. But ultimately, what our understanding is that Amazon wants to put an international headquarters here. They're not going to move their headquarters in the States in Seattle, but they will create an international headquarters somewhere in North America, and they don't discount Canada. What's happened with us is that we've partnered with Buffalo and Hamilton, and we have a Buffalo-Hamilton corridor. Hamilton's also partnered the second bid with Toronto because there's already Amazon in Toronto. So there's an opportunity for them in Canada, at least in Ontario, to look at the Toronto-Hamilton corridor. I already know that our good friend Harry Schlang's got a huge proposal in from Brampton, so we know that's a second proposal, and we have ours. But ours is the only international one. Ours is the international one that says, hey, you don't all have to be in the States. You don't have to all be in Canada. And it's a 50,000 employee situation. It's huge. It's worth billions of dollars to capitalize on this. And we've been told by Amazon that they're very interested in the international approach. It's unique in their thinking. So we'll have to see how that unfolds. But it's like, you know, you don't buy a ticket, you can't win a lottery. But there's been a lot of work put into it. We were also successful in helping the town of Fort Erie by facilitating an application to the Region of Niagara for their waterfront investment program. And as a consequence, the town has achieved an $850,000 grant. And that goes towards a $2.2 million upgrade of what will then be an $8 million beach for Fort Erie. So Bay Beach and that 1,000-foot stretch is unique. It's a Caribbean-rated beach, and it's a huge attraction, and now we're going to capitalize on that. We also have, in terms of dealing with the gaming industry in Fort Erie, the Fort Erie Gaming Industry Campaign, and they'll just highlight the fact that this is our 17th year doing this, and we have raised over $3 million to date that augments the marketing for our major tourist attractions in gaming in Fort Erie. And of course, I'd be remiss if I didn't tell you, we have a well-received Fort Erie Visitor's Guide. We distribute 85,000 copies of that every year, and it goes to every hotel, every media outlet, every visitor center throughout Ontario. Every Ontario Travel Information Center goes to Ohio, goes throughout Buffalo, goes through Niagara, both sides. So we also did an interesting project this year called the Lake Labor Workshop Labor Workforce Strategy. This is something that's been close to my heart for a long time. It's how we started out in 1983 in labor adjustment. But we keep hearing people say, we need more jobs in Fort Erie. And quite frankly, it's not true. We need more employees. We need people who want to work. And this presentation will be provided to council after. I know you're going to put it up on your website. We'll have it on ours. But anybody who's listening can take a look at this. We can tell you that even the government doesn't listen to this. We put every agency that has anything to do with employment or unemployment or services, we put them into three workshop sessions and figured out a way to map a program that could have been put into an app form. And anybody who's looking for an employee would be able to use the app to find it and to link to them. And anybody who wanted a career path could put their skill sets, their interests in, and find a career path, and not only a career path, but the people that could advise them, and in fact, real businesses that need those skill sets. And we offered it to the government of Ontario, do with it what you will, and they haven't done a damn thing. I don't think they're interested in this. I think they're still interested in talking a story, but we've been talking about labor shortages and skills mismatches for 5 years longer here in Fort Erie than the province was. But if you want to see the jobs, this is a highlight of jobs that are on one site, just indeed.ca. And you can see these are the jobs posted in the last couple of days just in Fort Erie. I love Airbus helicopters being up there, the industrial mechanic, because it was 9 years ago when I presented to Council of Fort Erie that we had skills problems, mismatches, and that if anybody wanted their child to start out at $100,000 a year, why don't you take a look at being a mechanic, an aircraft mechanic at Fleet or at Airbus? And if they had, I brought it up every year, and at the end of that, 4 years later, I said, you know what? If somebody had to listen, they'd have that job today. And here we are, 10 years later, and we're still looking for Airbus industrial mechanics. Still. So anybody that thinks that Fort Erie is a destitute place with a lot of unemployed is just wrong. We need people to fill jobs. That's only the jobs in Fort Erie. These are the jobs that are available to people in Fort Erie within kind of driving distance, because places in Welland and Port Colborne and Niagara Falls know they can advertise in Fort Erie. There's over 150 jobs available right now that are posted. There are jobs that aren't posted. We successfully completed the 16th Annual Developers Roundtable this year in September, and also the 16th Annual Industrial Leaders. Skills, access, employees that want to work, employees that want to learn, employees that are looking for career paths were the number one issue for both of those categories, both of those cohorts. They cannot expand. They cannot grow. They don't have a future if they can't bring on new blood in employment. So if you want to get the message out there, Fort Erie is a place where there's jobs for those that want them and those that are willing to learn. And if you've got skills, by all means, come here. Now we can also sell the quality of life. Better costs, closer proximity to good stuff, a lot of amenities, including green spaces. But first and foremost, people need to be feeding themselves. So that's the highlights of the year. We've done a lot more than that, of course, but we don't want to bore you or take you up all night. And we present our budget, which is right on target for the 1.2% staff quota.
Thank you, Ms. Very much, Mr. T-Bear. Thank you for your presentation. If you wouldn't mind remaining at the podium in case anyone on council has questions regarding the presentation. Your Worship.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What's the name of that jobs app that you were referring to that has been provided to the provincial government?
It's not an app yet. We created the tool. We call it the Labor Force Adjustment Tool, and it's all in prose. It has to be converted to an app.
Sounds like an opportunity.
Well, we offered to do it. We estimated $100,000 to get it to that level. We don't have the skills to build the app. We also have to have the skills to put the database together in a time. But the government could do it, or they could give it to an agency to do. I mean, it's an ideal little thing. That's what people are used to now, an app. You know, I'm interested in this career path, or this is what this is what I like to do. Everybody tells me, you know, if you want a career, then find one that you like to do. Well, how do you do that? Well, you darts, you know? I'm an economist. I know what NCIS codes are. I know the international standard classifications, 1 to 10,000. But, you know, there's pages and pages of these things. Break them down. Restaurants are broken down into, you know, probably 3,000 different categories. There's nothing out there that would help these people. Job Jim is as close as it gets if they know somebody and something. But you really need to create a systemic tool that's updated by somebody all the time. Because if the data isn't current and they like something and they want a service, you better have the right phone number and the right contact person in that app.
Thank you very much. Anything further, Your Worship? Any other comments or questions? Thank you very much, Mr. T-Bear.
Is that a record?
I don't know if it was a record.
Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
For the opportunity. We'll make sure that the clerk gets copies of all this electronically.
Thank you, and we'll move on to item B on the agenda, which is reports. Can I have a mover for CBC-04-2018? Your Worship, that report is now on the floor. That is the Library 2018 operating budget. Comments or questions, Your Worship?
No, I'm good.
Okay. Seeing no other comments or questions, I'll call to order. All those in favor of the report recommendations? That carries. Moving on to CBC-05-2018, Economic Development and Tourism Corporation 2018 operating budget. Can I get a mover? Councillor McDermott, that report is on the floor for comments or questions. Councillor Luberts.
Yes, thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Just looking at the report, I just want to go to page 14 of the report, and they're talking about the smart labs, and I don't know who I would direct my question to. I'm assuming that would go to our CAO's office, but or even maybe the mayor. But from my perspective, we're still in a closed session protocol when it comes to this smart lab. And everything that we've discussed in closed session is supposed to be confidential. And I'd just like to know why it is that this smart lab information is in this report when we are all under confidentiality protocol.
Mr. Cookett, or Your Worship?
Through you, Chair, to the Councillor. From what I can see in this report that EDTC has provided, it's very vague information at best. It doesn't go into any great detail of the particulars that we have spoke about in the closed session. So what he has here, I don't see being an issue. It's very preliminary information with no great detail.
Thank you, Mr. Cookett.
Yes, thank you very much, Mr. Cookett. I understand there's not a whole lot of detail here, but when we got our report from the EDTC from Deloitte, there wasn't a whole lot of detail in there either. There was a whole lot of things that were not answered. In fact, there was Deloitte went to these people from Smart Lab and wanted some answers, and they didn't get any response. In Deloitte's report, they also tell us that they didn't confirm anything.
Point of order. When you start to talk about a specific report, then you're talking about stuff that is closed session. It's not referred to in this report from the Economic Development Corporation. And if you want to talk about that, I think we need to go into closed session.
Well, I don't know that we need to go into closed session anymore because now it's out there.
Well, you're not listening.
My understanding.
Then you're not listening.
Mayor Redekop, listen, my understanding about closed session and closed session meetings, it doesn't qualify for closed session if you have talked about it in public. This is brought up now in public. This has now become a public document. It's public information that the town of Fort Erie and the EDTC is talking to some people in Dublin, Ireland, about a virtual lab and some PhD program that may come to Fort Erie.
Okay.
So the details, it doesn't matter.
That's not true.
Your protocol has been broken.
Hold on, Councillor Luberts. Go ahead, Your Worship.
So
you called the point of
order. I called the
privilege.
Point of order.
Go ahead.
Right.
Call the point of order.
So this information, if you wanted to ask why this information is in this report, that should have been asked of the person who prepared the report. Neither Mr. Cookett nor I, nor do I presume any councillor saw this report from the EDTC until we got a copy of it. We didn't have anything to do with the preparation of it. The mere fact that there's a reference to this here doesn't breach confidentiality with respect to a whole plethora of other issues that relate to it. We talk about CMS, we talk about the marina. We don't talk about confidential aspects of either. So the notion that just because a four-point blurb is contained in a 20 or 25-page document all of a sudden releases confidentiality isn't accurate. So that what's in here, you're right, that's public. What's here is public. The fact that the Economic Development Corporation is considering an issue or an opportunity, that's now public knowledge. Wouldn't have been my preference, but it's now public knowledge. But the information that we have with respect to this, that's still confidential. So if you want to talk about any information that we've received regarding this, we would have to go into closed session.
The whole fact here, Mayor Redekop, is the fact that's been brought up. I'm telling you that I don't feel now that we have confidentiality in this year report. You can say, well, you know, the things that we talked about are confidential. What is it that's confidential with the CMS? Everything that the CMS is doing, it's all out there now. Everything with Miller Creek Marina, it's all out there now. Everything that I know is everything that I have from Miller Creek Marina, I can talk about. There's no confidentiality protocol with Miller Creek Marina. And I don't have anything on my desk that says I can't talk about anything with the CMS.
Okay, Councilor Lubertz, are you putting forward a motion to go into closed session to discuss the particulars of what was discussed in the previous?
No, I'm just curious as to...
Thank you. Do you
as
have
a board,
any other
No, I would like to know from
report?
Mayor Redekop, as a board member...
The mayor's answered the question.
No, as a board member, why does he not know what's going into their budget?
Okay,
why does he
question.
Not know what's going into their annual report?
Mayor Redekop?
Well, I do know what's in their budget because we would have reviewed their budget and approved it at the Economic Development Board meeting. What goes into this material, it's very much like a report that we receive from our staff. I don't review the staff reports before they come to us. It's not my job. My job is to review it once it's presented to us. This report has been presented to council for our consideration. This report wasn't presented to the Economic Development Corporation Board. And what goes into it is something that the staff of the EDTC is responsible for.
Well, who puts together the report for the EDTC? Does the board not have any input on it?
Question's been answered. The staff do. He stated that in his
answer. And the board has no input as to the content of the report?
No more than we as councillors or members of council would have in the preparation of our staff reports. We don't prepare our staff reports. We consider them and deliberate on them when they come before us at a council or committee meeting.
Yes, and our staff, they put together the report. Your board needs to know what's going to be presented. We need to know what's going to be presented. We get a copy of the report, and then we say, okay, yeah, we can present that. If we get a copy of the report and there's something in that report that shouldn't be in there, or something in that report that needs to be held confidential, or something that isn't confidential that they mark confidential, then we bring it up.
Well, the fact that you have an opportunity for input into staff reports here at the town hall, that's news to me. I don't advise staff what they should be putting in the reports.
You received the report before it gets here on Monday evening. You received the report a week ahead of time.
Just like everybody else. Just like the public does. We get the agenda with the reports the same time that's put on our website. So we don't prepare the reports. We don't advise staff what to put in the reports. Same thing with this annual report from the EDTC. The board isn't telling the chair or the staff what they should be putting in these reports. I'm surprised to see this information from Smart Lab, but if we want to talk more about it, my advice is we should go into closed session. If you need clarification, my other suggestion is if Councillor Lubertz is concerned about this being confidential or what the implications of this being in the annual report are, why don't we provide this to our lawyer and ask the lawyer to provide us with some advice with respect to it?
Yeah, we can do that too, and we can also go to the ombudsman. And we can ask the ombudsman if the information that we discussed in closed session qualified to be discussed in closed session.
Well,
that's where I would like to go.
Well, fine. That's
your opportunity and your prerogative. If you want to do that as a citizen, Councilor Lubertz, you're more than welcome to. Do you have any other questions regarding the report outside of the Smart Labs information? Okay, seeing none, are there any other councillors that have comments or questions? Councilor Passero?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can we call the question, please?
Yes. We'll call the question on report CBC 05-2018, the Economic Development and Tourism Corporation, EDTC 2018 operating budget. All those in favor? Opposed?
So we just pushed this through. No questions. You can't ask no questions about the EDTC. That's
the rules
real
of
nice.
Procedure.
That's real nice, Mr. Chair. Thank you very much.
You're out of order, Councillor Lubertz, and I'll tell you why. Councillor Passero followed the rules of procedure. He called the question. Anytime there's called the question, there's no further discussion on it.
Thank you very much. And I'm happy to be out of order when it comes to not being able to ask questions. Thank you.
That report is passed. The date of the next meeting for the general levy operating budget is Wednesday, January 24th. I'll go ahead and pass the chair back to the mayor.
Thank you very much, Councillor Nutt. Would you like to move to adjourn?
I would like to move to adjourn. The Council and Budget Committee for the Town of Fort Erie hereby adjourns at 7:42 p.m.
All those in favor? Opposed? That is carried.